Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Maron to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Maron at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons, aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Hello, how are you doing this week? What we've been up to around here. It's actually been quite a busy week for me. I've had an album out. I've done an album that's basically a greatest hits album that's called Songs from the Kitchen Disco, which has been inspired by this year and the kitchen discos we ended up doing in our house. And it's really made me think a lot about actually loads of things. I think primarily it's made me think about how crazy it is. I started the year back in January thinking my year was going to be one shape and then end up another, like everybody else. But I think there's also something about seeing the physical embodiment of something that came into creation solely because of what happened this year has made me really think. I think, you know, maybe for everybody, there was a bit back in March, April, where I felt like, you know, we were on hold for a bit, but then life would continue. And then you sort of realise actually the significance of everything being put on pause is not something you can just sort of skirt over and then pick up where you left off. Although that being said, I have started work again on the album I started in January, so... You know, it was actually really nice to come back to it, and I can't wait to finish that as well. So this week I've done lots of talking about myself while I do interviews, which, you know, is as strenuous as it sounds. It's actually really easy and also really nice. Everybody's been really lovely to speak to this week. And what else? Well, actually, it's funny because my guest this week is Sophie Robinson, who's an interior designer who I've really liked ever since I saw her do the Great British Interior Design Challenge, which is a series I watched. I watched all the series of it. And Sophie was a judge on that. And what I loved about her wasn't just that her love of colour really resonated with me, but I always thought she was incredibly warm and supportive and kind to all the contestants as well. And actually, I think in a weird way, that kind of had a bit of influence on me today because, you know, like everybody else, I've been spending loads of time indoors and the weather's been a bit murky this weekend too. So I started the day, I was like, okay, I'm going to put on my jeans and my top and no makeup and la la. And then I thought, actually, no, I'm going to actually put on some lipstick and I'm going to put on a dress that, you know, makes me feel a bit more perky. So I put on a gold sparkly one, which, you know, pretty bold choice, to be quite honest with you. But just about get away with it as a daytime thing, I think. And you know what? It did honestly lift my mood. And I'm by no means suggesting that everything can be solved with a bit of colour and you know, putting a nicer outfit on in the day. Of course not. But I do think that when you involve colour in yourself and or at least attention to detail or wear something you love, it does make you feel like you matter a bit more than you did when you just sort of chucked on anything that was lying nearby and didn't really think about yourself too much. But hey, maybe that's just me. So anyway, I'm sat here with my cat, Rizzo, a cup of tea, a room that's a little bit quiet away from the noise of my house, which has been quite challenging the last few days. Everybody seems to have projects on the go and it's busy everywhere. But yeah, I'm really excited to listen back to the chat with Sophie because not least, we laughed so much. Even when we were discussing really personal tricky things like Sophie's desire to have a second baby that, you know, eventually she just realised wasn't going to happen, even though she tried for a long time to lots of different fertility options. But even through that, she was laughing about the way it all happened. And I think that is a woman after my own heart, really. It's healthy to be able to reflect on these things. Oh, can you hear that in the background? Mickey is shouting my name. Mommy! Mommy! I better go. Anyway, see you on the other side. Lots of love. Enjoy. So I've actually been a fan of you for a really long time. I used to watch the Great Interior Design Challenge.
Well, Dan, you don't know how often that's missaid.
Oh, did I say it right?
Yeah, you did.
Not the Great British Interior.
Yeah, exactly. It always gets people so confused. So well done. 10 out of 10.
Yes, I used to watch that. And I think I've always been someone that's really excited about interiors. And for me, my house is, I think, probably the same for you, a complete extension of me. And I think you were the first person I saw talking so excitedly about colour and giving it a properly sort of grown-up take rather than colour being what wacky people do if they don't know how to mix shades of grey and beige and things. So it's such a treat to be in your house because I'm basically just eyeing up everything all the time.
It's like a sweetie shop, isn't it? It's my sweetie shop.
Oh, but it's glorious and happy. And the thing I didn't quite get completely from Instagram is that the big, there's a sort of an extra star of the show, which is all the stuff outside the window. I mean, how beautiful is that view?
Yeah, you don't, sometimes in summer I'll share my garden, but yeah, usually my Instagram is just focusing on the inside, isn't it? But yes, there is, we're in East Sussex, we've got 5 acres outside.
5 acres?
Yeah.
That means there's bits of your garden you probably haven't really visited yet.
Well, a big part of it is a meadow, and then we've got a bit of an orchard, and it's all a bit rambly, and there's a pond and a willow tree. And then luckily for us, we're then surrounded by 100 acres of woodland, which is open to the public, so we can go beyond our garden and into the woods. So it is a slice of paradise here for sure. And actually, when we bought the house, funnily enough, it was for the garden and the surroundings because the house itself was very, very beige.
And so you've been here for 4.5 years.
Mm.
But you moved from a 2-bedroom flat, so this is a big shift.
Yes, 2-bedroom flat, no garden, to a 4-bedroom house with 5 acres. Yeah, it was a bit like gulp. But it was really interesting how it came about because my husband and I were actually renting. Our house we'd put on Airbnb in Brighton, which was a fantastic little money earner for us. So we rented a 2-bedroom flat while we rented out our 4-bedroom house to save. That was the sort of plan. And that took us about 6 years. And then we were house hunting. And at the same time, my parents had been through a divorce and were having trouble selling our family home in Warwickshire. But then, and so my mum was renting down here. And then actually that sale went through just as Tom and I were looking. And then I just was like, well, you're looking for somewhere in the countryside outside Brighton. And so are we. And actually, how about us looking together and sort of pooling our money together? And that's how we've ended up with 5 acres. But that's how we've ended up with our house for me, Tom and Arthur. And then you notice when you arrived, the very modern annex next door is where my mum is. And actually, when we bought this property, that was a really ugly carbuncle of a kind of garage situation. So we completely remodeled that, got planning permission, remodeled that, and then she moved in there.
Oh, so how does it feel living with your... I mean, does she come like over to the house all the time?
Well, we had to have some really serious conversations about obviously living next door to one another. I mean, I've always had a really strong bond with my mum and we get on really well. And she's has been and continues to be enormously supportive of me as a working mum, especially when Arthur was really, really tiny and I was away doing a lot of filming. she was incredible. And so, you know, I must admit, I was like, oh, we could share a house. And I was like, God, childcare on site, that'd be incredible.
Yeah, that's
right. So I'm not going to deny that that wasn't part of my thinking around it. But also, it was really important that her and Tom had a good relationship, which they did. And the other thing I think that works with my mum is she is quite private. Mm. And she's not round here all the time having a cup of tea. In fact, I'd say that it's more likely I'll go over to her house for a catch-up. She's quite independent. And when we were looking for a property, she was like, I want my own front door. I want my own kitchen. Because she knew I'd get her cooking for us and all sorts of giving half
it's all
chance.
About boundaries, you know.
Yeah, so she was really clear with that. And I thought, okay, that's why it's going to work, because we're going to have the, you know, we are in physically different buildings.
Yeah.
But what has been really great is, you know, she is there as a backup for me when I need her to help me out. She's a really passionate gardener, which has really helped me, because I've never owned a garden before I lived here.
Mm.
So it's been wonderful having her knowing and understanding
all
of that. So I think, and then she's got us for company because she's on her own and support. So it's actually a really equal, I'd say, beautiful sort of symbiotic relationship.
It sounds really ideal and so nice for Arthur as well to have his, or does she like to be called grandma, granny?
Yeah, I think she's grandma or grandma. Granny, yeah. Grandma, okay.
As I was saying to Claire on the way here, I've reserved grandma as my name for the future. My mum's a grandma. So I've got digs on that, even though my youngest is one, so it's good to be prepared.
Yeah.
But I think the bond that my eldest has with my mum is really special. So for Arthur, does he suddenly just pop around there by himself?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially if she's watching like Housewives of Cheshire or something. All the shows we don't have in our house, he loves it. Yeah, exactly. And he just loves going over for a chat. Arthur loves a chat. He's really in for like grabbing a bar stool. And
and this is Arthur, who turned nine.
He's just turned nine, lockdown. Yeah.
What was his lockdown birthday like? Was it okay?
Yeah, it was okay. I think, you know, as I had a lot of anxiety around the fact that he's an only child and it was a long time without seeing any other kids. And I bought a lot of my probably worries around that. But actually, I think it was fine. He said he really enjoyed his birthday because obviously he got me and Tom just massively giving him loads of attention. We got really into cycling, bike rides in the woods. That was our big thing in lockdown. Yeah. So I think we went for a bike ride picnic on his birthday. It was a bit more difficult with my mum because we were obviously really at that time distancing from her because she's obviously over 70. So we weren't, what was nice about the summer we had is we could be together in the garden, but we weren't. In fact, she's still not coming in our house. So we're still being really careful.
Mm.
But we were able to socialise outside. Mm. But yeah, I mean, it was interesting, wasn't it, lockdown? Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite weird to think back to. I mean, obviously, it went very much not over everything. I appreciate that. But that actual lockdown bit, the sort of weeks on end of life being totally turned upside down, looking back on it, it's so strange, isn't it? Even now, it's like, it feels like such a big, I don't know if you had this, I kept thinking, have I just dreamt this whole thing? Is this really happening? And particularly here where you said, you know, you're in this lush, you know, area of the countryside. So presumably you're not necessarily feeling like you're in the thick of it. It's not like you're going, like buses going past and life happens. So you probably weren't really seeing a massive shift outside your front door.
It's really interesting, actually. You're so right. And I think that had positives and negatives. I think one of the positives were that a lot didn't change for us other than we weren't going out to school or to work or me going up to London. That was different. But we weren't seeing anything differently because we're really isolated here. I mean, you've arrived, you've seen the farm track that we live at the bottom of.
Yeah.
There was no listening to anyone banging pots on a Thursday evening here, you know. So that wasn't so great. You know, maybe there's a lovely feeling of community. My brother lives in Wimbledon and he just has discovered his whole street and they've got a WhatsApp group and it was actually a really incredible time to know your neighbours if you lived in that kind of situation. So yeah, for us it could be quite isolating, but then the beauty was is we didn't have any anxiety of seeing lots of people wearing masks or feeling like we had to distance from anyone because there's literally nobody here apart from us.
It just almost keeps it quite abstract, I think. It's quite hard to tether it into your own reality sometimes. And even where we are, we would go to, I live in Chiswick, so I go sometimes to the high road and actually it felt still quite busy with people getting food and that kind of thing. But one day Richard and I did a cycle ride through Soho and that was really crazy.
Yeah,
it was completely empty. You know, we took photos of ourselves, Piccadilly Circus, not a soul. That was when it was
eerie?
Yes, it was definitely eerie, but also, Well, I suppose I don't want to use the wrong word and think I'm, you know, thumbs up for pandemics. So definitely not. But it's quite exciting because you're aware you're seeing something so unusual. So, you know, going through Chinatown, going through Leicester Square, it was like being privy to something really unique and, you know, seeing London through a different way as well. So it was kind of quite sort of, I don't know, I suppose just a big shift in what the norm is. But I think as things have tried to emerge back into some sort of normality, those are the bits of London that actually still that feel quite sad now because there's not that kind of footfall, sort of the little gift shops. You'll see people in there waiting to, you know, serve people, but no one's really doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? The whole, for me, on so many levels, the slowing down element was the positive that I took from lockdown and seeing everybody else slow down because, you know, we just rush through life at 100 miles an hour. I certainly do, and sometimes don't feel like you're coming up for air. And while it was massively confronting at the beginning, trying to get your head around juggling work, homeschooling, and trying to recalibrate the fact that you can't just do everything, like things are slowing and stopping, and what does that look like and what does that mean? And obviously there was lots of anxiety that came up with that. But then when, because it did go on for so long, you had to surrender to it, didn't you?
Yeah, definitely.
And I think when I did that and I was like, okay, my focus is today, whatever hideous homeschooling lesson got sent down the internet, you know, it was just like, we're just going to deal with that today. I think in actual fact has been so good for me to have that, yeah, just to slow down and then slowly build.
I mean, you say you're slowing down, but then you said this week you've brought out your third online course, but you did one during lockdown as well. And that sounds like it's a lot of work and passion that goes into that.
Yeah, so, you know, I've got lots of different, I've sort of got an umbrella business, if you like, which is in colourful interior design is the umbrella. And then I do lots of things within that underneath. There's, you know, the blog, there's the podcast, there's brand collaborations. And then the growing part of my business is these online interior design courses, which really came about through, I was doing workshops. I mean, I'm just like, basically, I'm just mad passionate on people having really colourful, happy homes, if you want one. You know, if you're wedded to grey and it gives you all the squeals, like, absolutely, there are plenty of people who are going to help you with that. But if you're someone who loves colour, finds it really joyful, then I can help with that. So I had been running workshops for sort of the last 4 years, some in Brighton, some in London, where I'd get people together and we'd mood board and I'd teach them loads of stuff. And it was just such an awesome day. And very much about building a community of people with a shared passion as well. And then I was getting all these messages, you know, would I come to Sydney? Would I come to San Francisco? Would I come to Copenhagen, you know, to do these workshops? And I was just thinking, you know, again, being a mum, running a business, having a family, like, no, that's just not really on the card. Sounds great, but it's not going to happen. And so I started thinking to teach online, launched one last year that did really well, and then did colour psychology for interiors, is something I'm really into, was planned to launch in April. Mm-hmm. And obviously I've been working on it since October the year before. These take me ages to write and produce. And then, you know, obviously lockdown happened and I was about to launch this course. And it was a really challenging time because I kind of had to stay focused on the course launch because I was like, it's here. I need to get it out there. But not knowing whether it was a really inappropriate thing to do while everybody's dealing with a global pandemic. And I'm going, hey, let's talk about interior design. I felt very uneasy about whether it was the right thing to do. And then I thought, you know what, people are locked in their houses and I know this course is going to make them feel good. It's going to be an uplift.
Yeah.
So it's up to them whether they buy it. I'm just going to stick it out there. And if people want it, brilliant. And that's all you can do. And actually it did really well because it is what people wanted. They wanted a distraction and they wanted some content that was going to be positive and uplifting. So, you know, actually it was brilliant, but I'm not going to lie. The whole thing was, yeah, like you say, with the timing of it.
Yeah, it's quite hard to sort of pitch to second guess the tone sometimes. But I think your instinct is just right. And when they say want uplift, but also so many people have been really looking properly at their houses. And especially if you're someone that's maybe got a really long commute, that means you're out most of the day and you're only really at home at the weekends. There might be lots of things you wanted to do in your home or felt like you haven't really even made your home have that much personality or feel like your place.
Yeah.
And this has been a real year for thinking, right, what can I do here? I mean, I don't know if the same for you, but in our house, we did loads of sort of home improvement-y things or going through cupboards we hadn't done for ages or organising stuff. There's lots of that went on during lockdown. And I really enjoyed that, actually, and to properly sort of giving my home a little bit of TLC, really.
Yeah, even just an edit. Like you say, you don't have to go out and spend loads of money and kind of completely redecorate. It's sometimes just going through the cupboards and drawers and thinking, right, why is all this stuff in here?
Yeah.
It can be really, oh my God, it can give you such a buzz. I mean, don't get me wrong, I hate it. I'm a natural hoarder. And so.
Are you though? Because this is a very tidy house.
No, I have just had a big, session. I think you have to do it every year. For example, even all those storage units that you can see behind, on top of there had become a mountain of Lego boxes. And
Lego's like a running theme with me. I know about
that. Totally. And it was just always loads of toys. Mm. And I've got all that storage underneath. So it took me a whole day. This is the thing. It is time consuming. I emptied all those cupboards. And I was like, okay, we don't play with that. That board game we've never played in 4 years. You know, just all those sorts of things. And just thinking there isn't room for all this stuff. So some of it's got to go. And then now the
Lego's...
You're
quite good at it then when you start going with clear out.
Yeah, I'm kind of one of those people where I have to let it get so bad that I'm absolutely wigging out and then I go in really hard. You know, like some people do, apparently some people do like a little edit every month. They'll do like a run to the charity shop every month, just getting rid of bits. No, I'm not that methodical.
I think I'm half-half, really. I've got always got a pile behind a sofa in my sitting room, like a charity shop pile. And this morning was fun because I'd put there... a couple of weeks ago, some little yellow wellies that I thought Mickey might wear, but he didn't seem to enjoy wearing them. I thought, well, I'll just, they're in good condition, I'll pass them on. And I put them behind the sofa, and then he found them. He's got a bit obsessed with shoes. Mickey's only one. He found them, and he's like, shoes, and wanted to put them on. And one of the wellies was filled with water. And my thought was that it was my 11-year-old kit, because he's prone to doing like the odd quirky thing around the house. So finding him like experimenting with putting water in a shoe would just not really surprise me. And as an indicator that, I thought, I'll just bring it up at some point. Like, that's how many things I've probably got to talk to him about, like that, you know, daily. And this morning I was sat in the sitting room and I heard drip, and I realised that the welly had actually just caught a leak that's coming through the ceiling that's above where all that pile is. Yeah, so the welly had just become the receptacle. It wasn't kit. It's actually a leak in my ceiling.
Wow.
So that's what I've left behind today. So thanks for having me into your lovely, warm, dry house. There's not a leak falling into a child's welly. I've always got up after the charity shop, and my house is in a perpetual state of... It's going to be, when I've done that, I'll get that room done. And I've been there over 10 years now. I'm sort of trying to acknowledge the fact that there'll probably be a never finished state in my home. But do you feel like here, I mean, to the outsider looking in, it looks like everything is pretty much as you'd want it. You know, it looks absolutely beautiful.
What I can recommend is, if you do an online course and say you're going to film it all in your house, it's a really good...
I need to do.
Me and my husband have been really busy the last few months. Just, you know, even just all the bits that never, the trims that never get put on, the bit of furniture that never gets a lick of paint. You know, we've done all those jobs that are always put off to tomorrow. So to be fair, you are seeing it, it's best. But actually, I'd say the old part of the house is done. Our bedroom isn't, which is above the living room where you're seeing here. That's an absolute car crash. You'll never see that on Instagram. Still got the Artex ceiling that we...
And take some pictures for the before.
Yeah, no, so I'll take some pictures before, but yeah, it's awful. And actually, we have just got planning permission to knock this through and do an extension.
Oh, wow.
So that's what we'd really like to do. And actually, we did kind of feel that when we bought this house, we had this kind of idea that we'd love to extend, because as you've seen... there is all the lovely view at this end of the house.
Yep.
But what do? We live in the kitchen, which looks over the cars, and it's north-facing, and it's the smallest room in the house. And that's where we live.
So you're going to move the kitchen?
So we're going to move the kitchen down
wow,
here.
Wow, that's a
so
big change.
This will be open-plan kitchen diner with
gorgeous.
The views of the meadow and the orchard and all the things that you want to look at, which the house offers no view.
I can totally picture that. That's going to work really
well.
Yeah,
the house offers no views at all at the moment. So that's going to be really big.
And how much of this house is... is your husband and Arthur, do they get excited about?
Question. So
I'm taking a lot from that pause.
Tom does have opinions. He's, you know, some husbands are like, oh, whatever, darling, whatever makes you happy. He's not that man. He has said quite a few times when we do the extension, categorically no more pink anywhere. He's like done with
aww,
it.
I love pink.
I know, well, exactly. And
I've taken your mantra, pink isn't neutral.
Well, this is it. Pink isn't neutral. So yeah, clearly we're gonna have pink in the extension, but he just doesn't know how I'm gonna slip it in quite yet.
Actually, no, lovely... Richard said that about our kitchen and I just did it anyway, and I really likes it, so it's fine.
Well, that's it. I mean, my office has this very strong House of Hackney wallpaper on it. And when that design first got launched, I got the Sense Swatch and I just showed him. I was like, isn't this the best thing ever? And he was like, over my dead body. He was like, no way. That is he actually thinks that is hideous. It's a bubblegum pink background with psychedelic chintz florals through it. Heavenly. Anyway, I know not to give up on a dream. So it just got kind of shelved. And then obviously when it came down to do my office, he couldn't really call the shots on that. No, so I did it. And all I'd like to say is he loves it. He thinks it looks absolutely brilliant. And sometimes and this is one thing I think he's really learned living with me, is you do have to see a vision come together at the end. Yes. You can't just pass judgment on a swatch of wallpaper. It's then how it's all.
You've also got a bit of a trump card that's actually your job.
Yeah, I do. It's a massive trump card.
Just have to wait till this vision comes together. You
know, I love my mum. My mum's so brilliant. So my mum, considering, you know, I am an interior designer, right, for like 25 years, love her judgment. So when the wallpaper went up and then I got this really crazy, fantastic painting, it's really big. And I love the fact that it's a very full-on painting against a very full-on wallpaper. Like, that's purposeful. Mm. My mum comes in, oh, I love that painting, it's great. But far too much against that wallpaper. She just totally tells me how it is.
You're like, mum, people pay me for my opinion, actually.
She's always like, no, you made a mistake there, clearly. And she does that quite a lot. And now I used to annoy me, and now I just find let it roll. Yeah.
What about Arthur? What does he have to say?
Yeah, he
everything?
Has really strong opinions.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, he does. And he designed and decorated his bedroom.
Oh, cool.
Which was That's brilliant. Nice. He was actually 5 when he chose that scheme.
What did he go with?
It's atomic red.
Oh, wow.
About the same colour as your cardigan, like really super bright red.
Flaming
orangey red. And what I love about it is when we picked the colour, he was like, on all 4 walls, mummy. I was like, oh my God, he is my protege. Yeah. Love it. And then he chose a gentle sky, which is a very pale blue for the ceiling.
Oh, it's got a ceiling paint as well. That's nice.
And again, that was his idea. Mm-hmm. I probably would have just done it white and not thought about it, but he wanted that. And then interestingly, I was away with work recently. We had the decorator here and Arthur's room just never got finished. The door's been just primed white and I'm painting all my UPVC windows at the moment to try and disguise the fact that they are UPVC windows. It really works, actually. If you paint them, they don't look plastic anymore. It's brilliant.
Mm.
We will get round to replacing them at one point, but this is not until the big renovation happens. So I wanted to do his windows black. And it was all going ahead. I know I got the phone call. I was like, I don't want my windows back, mummy. And I was like, oh, but you know, it'll help blend in with the black and white tree wallpaper you've got. And it's, you know, and I was trying to justify it. And he went, no, it won't. Because I like the fact that it's all light and bright and the black will kill the sunlight and the white just reflects the light back into the space.
Wow. How old was it? Was this recently?
This was recently. This is age 9 now, not 5.
That's very impressive.
But he, like, really understands. So I was like, okay, fine. Yeah, you're right. The white window will help the room feel lighter. So, yeah, we'll go with that.
And does he get involved in, like, his, you know, the other things, like what he wears and that kind of thing? Is he one of those kids
he's
that's
less quite interested,
aesthetic?
Actually. He's never been that interested in what he's wearing. His big thing's comfort. Nothing woolen. Mm. Nice, comfy waistband. He's good to go. Yeah. But he does wear colourful clothes. He doesn't wear black or navy or khaki or all those boy colours.
Mm.
I found one particular brand of clothing very good for him and he gets everything with Bowden. He's basically the Bowden boy. Because they just do really good bright colours, don't they?
Yeah.
And they do a really comfy waistband.
Yeah.
They really know what boys like.
It's true.
So, yeah, I'm sure that'll change as he gets older. But he does love colour. We just did the little shower room, which is opposite his bedroom. That was all just white loo, white basin, white shower. And I've made it into a rec room and it's got yellow tiles and really crazy floor tiles, but a pink loo and a pink basin.
Yes.
And he was so up for that.
Oh, good.
Which I think is really lovely. So I'm really pleased that he's not doing the pink's a girl's colour story. He really likes pink, as long as it's like a good, bold pink.
Yeah. No, my boys are like that too, actually.
So he had strong opinions on that, but I got the green card. And then I did a wallpaper in the bathroom and he wasn't happy about that. But I said, sorry, I like it. And I am actually going to push back on this one, Arthur.
Yeah, you've got to pick and choose your battles, haven't you? Yeah. A family home.
Yeah. So no, I have got two quite opinionated boys in the house. Yeah. But I think, if you know, it'd be interesting if you ask Tom. I think generally he likes the homey vibe in here. Mm. He likes the colour.
Yeah.
But when we do the extension, I am going to let him own that a bit more. And actually, that's his vibe anyway, all the architecture and what windows we're going to have and the soffits and all the cladding. Like, he's going to get, like, really into all of that stuff.
Yeah, it's funny whenever you do anything like, because I loved all the interior stuff of like wallpaper and soft furnishings and sofa covers. I get very excited about that. But if we've ever done anything kind of more structural, I suddenly find myself unable to remember what height I like a wall, you know, light switch, or whether or not I want skirting. Because I'm like, what do people normally have? I suddenly can't remember what the norm is. I'm just like, I just want pretty much what normally you'd expect, and then I'll work within that.
Yeah, because that's not of interest to you, those architectural details. No, I'm slightly the same. And when we did our hallway, we had to put a new staircase in. And I was just like lusting over floor tiles and wallpaper, you know, paint chips. And because we needed to build a new staircase, I had no idea how much detailing you could, on offer you had when you put a staircase in. And that was, and Tom just like, was just having such a ball with the carpenter, going, oh, and we could have this curve here, we could have a continuous oak handrail there, and this detail could go here like that, because he just loves woodwork and carpentry and all of that stuff. So that's, you know, that's brilliant.
That's a good balance, isn't it?
Yeah, I was just like, that. I want something that I can put my bright print stair runner on. That was like my only sort of
yes. And do you source secondhand things and vintagey things, or is it completely like, you, is it more like new stuff, or actually not going to really see?
Yeah, you can say lots of old battered stuff in here. Yeah, I mean, I like vintage anyway, because I think, I'm really into creating a homely home rather than a show home. And I, for me, old things just make somewhere feel rich and warm and homely. And I think I've always been brought up around old battered bits of furniture. And it is old battered bits of furniture. I'm really unprecious with my stuff. Like, one of the reasons why I've got a footstool, not a coffee table, is because that's where the karaoke happens and the cushion fights. And, you know, the kids love jumping on that. And I don't have loads of, like, standing lamps and beautiful vases around the sofa areas, because this is where the Nerf gun battles happen. So I think, you know, it's really important not to... I'm a little bit precious about the sofa, I'm not going to lie. Arthur likes walking on it in bare feet, and I do find myself going, look, dude... new sofa, just no, actually.
Yeah, I'll leave them up. What's your karaoke song, just out of interest?
Mine?
Yeah. You said mention karaoke or standing on that.
Oh, so it would probably be something like I'd Do It My Way or some big like.
It's fun. Was it very, very great as it happens?
Probably would. Some big power ballad somehow. I'm absolutely the world's worst singer, according to my family.
Well, they can't argue with My Way, because you're doing it your own way.
Yeah, but there you go.
It's a good choice.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So you mentioned you've been interior designing for 25 years. So this is something you've been doing since pre-baby. Did you always want to be a mum at some point?
Yeah. And interestingly, I think I did sort of, because I used to work in magazines and I went freelance in 2005. And I think even then I was thinking, oh, freelance career is going to be a really good thing when I come to have kids. You know, I want something that's going to be flexible. So I think I was thinking all the way back then of being self-employed in order to try and create a career that works around having a family. And then I met my husband in 2007, I think. And I proposed to him after 7 months.
Aww.
Because I was like, right, you're nice. I'd like to have your babies. Let's go. And I was a bit like that.
How did you propose? I don't think I've actually heard too much about that.
Yeah, it was a leap year. And it was February, but it wasn't on the day you're allowed to say.
I know, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
it's such
exactly.
A bizarre concept when you actually break it down, isn't it?
It's a really interesting concept. But I think what happened is I knew I wanted to get married. I knew I wanted to marry him. I'd obviously pretty confident that he felt the same. And there was obviously all these conversations about it being a leap year going on in the media. Mm. And I think I was like, this, seriously, are we having this conversation in this day and age that we're allowed one day every 4 years where we can kind of make the biggest decision of our, you know, one of the most biggest decisions of our lives. So I think that was running in the back of my mind. And then I kind of think, I'm going to do it. And we'd gone up to London. I can't remember why. We were in London. We live in Brighton, but we'd gone up to London. We were on Primrose Hill, which is really close to where I used to live in London. And I was like, I'm going to go on the bench, you know, the like real like movie spot. and I'm going to pop the question. And we walked up the top of the Bromley Cell. We just got stopped. Tom got a phone call and he was turned around and went, crap, I'm supposed to be in Brighton for a meeting. We've got to go. And it was like, oh, okay. And I remember thinking, oh, that's such a shame.
Yeah.
Anyway, pelted back to Brighton, got another phone call on the train. The meeting got cancelled or postponed. So the whole thing was a bit like that. And so we ended up in this pub together in Brighton, around the corner from where we live. And I was a bit deflated. And then I was like, I'm still going to do it. I just asked him in the pub. And it was our local sort of, you know, local to where we lived. It was lovely. Just like a really rainy February, whatever, Wednesday. Couple of old boys in there. And Tom just thought this was the best thing ever. He was so thrilled because he's quite a disruptor. He loves anything that's slightly anti-established, like how we're supposed to do stuff. So he thought this was wonderful and bought everybody in the pub a drink. Aww. But it was very interesting then when it came to ringing our dads, because then Tom was like, okay, well, you've now got to ring my dad and ask for his permission. So I was like, yeah, okay, I'll do that. So I ring poor Tom's dad in Bath going, hi, it's Sophie, can I have permission to marry Tom? He was just like, he got really freaked out and thought I was coercing Tom into some marriage he didn't want to be in. It all went a bit weird. So apart from that, it's just really interesting what other people's, you know, especially that generation, their expectations of the man should ask.
Mm.
Yeah, it took them much longer to get their heads around what was going on.
I know, because even when you talk about it, like, that is such an old-fashioned idea that that's the way around everybody kind of anticipates.
Yeah.
Maybe this is like one of the, you know, another thing that needs to be sort of spoken about a bit, really, because as you say, it's such a massive decision. We're so for, you know, marriage being equal partnership. You know, it's not all about taking your husband's name and having a traditional role. It's that's completely shattered. That's a thing of the past. And obviously you can go have it however you want it, but that's not the expectation anymore. But we still have this last remaining thing of the expectation is that you're going to be asked. And I know so many women that have complained so much about they've been in a long-term relationship and everything's great. They maybe got a kid and it's still, you know, but I'm waiting. Oh, he's not into marriage. So we're waiting for that. And I was like, you just wouldn't hear it the other way around.
Yeah. No. And also I think as well, one of the reasons why I did it is I was probably at that time in my life where everybody was getting engaged. You know, suddenly everyone drops like flies, don't they?
Yeah.
And then the next year is just around a summer of weddings. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was around that time. But so many of my friends whinging that he hasn't asked me yet. I want him to ask me. And just like, I was just like, seriously, this is nuts because these women are successful, empowered, awesome. And now they're whinging because their boyfriend won't ask them. Yeah, it's a bit pants.
It is. I mean, obviously, we're all open to the idea that whether or not actually getting married is for you, that's completely a different topic. But waiting for this sort of auspicious day when they're going to ask in a certain way is really, really old school. I think with my family, we had the bit that was unusual about Richard and I, found out we were having a baby very early on. So the marriage actually came, I think, signing about 14 months by the time we got married. But the bit that was really weird is that I'd only just started dating and then I had to tell people like my dad that I was pregnant. And my dad's first words when we said we were expecting a baby was, so you've had sex then?
Brilliant.
Yeah, I think it was shock, but it's quite immortalised that now. It's like, yeah, sorry, Dad. It's definitely happened at least once.
Yeah, that horse has bolted.
He went a little bit loopy and then he started asking like Richard where he went to school and all this kind of thing. I think he was like in total shock. I remember he was like rubbing his hair like this at the same time. I think it was like a self-soothing sort of rubbing himself like to reassure himself that life was still going to be okay, even if his daughter was knocked up. But it's quite funny.
And have you got any sisters or were you the...
So from my family, I'm an only child from my mum and dad and I was on my own till I was 8 and then my brother and sister on my mum's side was born when I was 8 and 11 and then my dad didn't have kids till I was 17.
Right. So you were his girl at that time. Mm. So
I mean, I've thought... My eldest turned 16 during the lockdown and I think my dad would have loved it if he'd had an equivalent for me at teenage. Like a 4-year lockdown would have been great.
My dad sounds quite similar, I'm not going to lie.
It's like he didn't mind me dating people, he just didn't really want to know about it.
No. Yeah.
That's fine with me.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, it's a whole multi-layered thing, isn't it? I mean, I think my dad had it took him quite a while to get his head. And I wasn't 16, I was 34 or something. It still took him ages to get his head around it.
Yeah, it's quite a bizarre kind of thing. Just have us like enclosed in the amber, like you're going to stay at this certain age where innocent, nothing can touch you. So when you found out you were having a baby, were you working at the time using all your
We got married the year after the engagement, and then I actually fell pregnant on honeymoon. Honestly, I was like, let's get this done. I was sort of that sounds really awful. I was just really clear that this was what I wanted to happen, and as is quite common, miscarried that pregnancy, and then fell pregnant with Arthur very soon after that. So it was all sort of, you know, everything was going to plan. I was working in TV at the time, but not on camera so much, off camera, working on an interior design program, doing all the room reveals. So it was quite a punishing, it's a really punishing schedule to be involved in, you know, away from home alone, lots of traveling up the M1, really, really full on time. And then Arthur came along, and I stopped work I kind of told myself, I give myself a year off. And my mum was quite heavy on me about this, about how you have to make the most of these opportunities and embrace motherhood. And my mum didn't have a career after she had me and my brother.
Did she work? Right.
So she's really passionate about that. So, and I kind of get it. I kind of knew where she was coming from. And I did really listen to her, and this whole, like, you know, as every mother's heard, they grow up so fast. You know, that was always really drummed into me. So I thought, right, I'll give a year. And I, again, being freelance, it was okay. I could do bits and bobs. I mean, I remember hilariously got asked to do 60 Minute Makeover on screen designer, which is a show that I'd done. I'd kind of dipped my toe into a bit. And I thought, okay, yeah, I need to do this. Like, this is an opportunity. I need to do this. And we got a motorhome at the time, Tom and I, and I took my mum in the motorhome. Took my mum in the motorhome with Arthur. I was breastfeeding, and just did that classic thing of running in and out for feeds, doing a bit of filming, and mum sitting in the motorhome with him all day. So we made it work, but it was, looking back on it, it was insane, because I just didn't even know my mind. But it was good fun.
So how old was Arthur then?
3 months.
Oh, totally, yeah.
And then there might have been another couple of smallish things that came in. But, yeah, it wasn't until... And I breastfed him for the first year. So it was really... That was the break then that... he didn't go to nursery or anything, but I could do bits. And my mum and my mother-in-law as well was really hands-on. Mm. They would sort of cover me for bits and bobs. So it was just slowly working part-time, I suppose, really. And pretty much until he went to school, actually.
Okay.
Just keeping that balance of...
So for about 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think with the work when they're little as well, you sort of try it on for size, because that's obviously who you were before you had a baby. And then sometimes some of it feels completely fine and natural. And other things you just think, this feels just a bit wrong, and I don't really feel like this is quite where my head's at right now.
God, you know, I completely forgot that I did Interior Design Challenge when he was two. It's such a blur, isn't it? I've just said to you, did I not work for 4 years? Oh, no, I did. I did that TV show.
Which must have been a big commitment.
Yeah, so that was interesting. So that was it. I'd actually decided to give up interiors after having Arthur.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I had. I thought, I'm just, you know, because it is quite, I was doing much more sort of styling work.
Giving up interiors in London. To do something totally different?
Yeah, or? To do something totally different. And this friend we'd met, me and Tom had been to holiday, travelling in India, and we met this guy called Dr. Kamaraj, who's a yoga teacher and a naturopath. And he came and lived with us for a bit in England. And then I was organising yoga retreats for him. So he'd come over and I'd organise his yoga retreats. And I just loved it. It was really nice. It was a totally different thing. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to get into that, because I can organise a venue and I can...
Do you actually do yoga yourself?
Or... Yeah, I was doing yoga myself a lot then. And I was just really interested in that whole scene. So I thought I was going to do that. And then BBC Two rang me up and were like, we're launching this new show. Will you screen test for it? And to be honest, I've been screen tested for so much over the years, of which nothing ever happens. So I just always say yes, and I go along and do my twirl and then either hear from them or not hear from them. But that one actually did end up with a commission, with me and Daniel judging it. And Arthur was two, I think, or coming up to two. And so that was super challenging, because that was a 14-week filming schedule away from home for 3 days and usually 3 nights every week. And I think he'd sort of started part-time nursery by that point. But I had a childminder come to the house at 7 because my husband had to leave work at 7. So she'd come at 7, have him till 9, where either my mum or my mother-in-law or he'd go to nursery. And then he'd do that. And then they'd have him in the afternoon. And then my husband would put him to bed. And it was quite a massive logistical nightmare.
Yeah.
And looking back on it, it put strain on all of us.
Mm-hmm.
It put strain on my husband. He actually hated it when I was working on that show because the other thing was...
Takes over.
I'd come back and I'd be so tired because I'd been in a pair of high heels for 3 days. Just, you know, talking constantly. So I'd feel completely like an empty vessel. And then, you know, I think my mum and Hilda never moaned about it, but it was asking a lot of their commitment at that time, which they were happy to do. I don't think they'd be so happy to do that now because they've very much got their own lives. But at that little time, they were happy to support me doing that. But I found it, yeah, I found it really tough. And so I did Design Challenge for 3 years. And then I had to be like, oh, that was it. Then he was about to go to school. And those 14 weeks are through the summer. Mm. And I thought, actually, I don't want to do this anymore because I won't see him in the summer holidays.
Mm.
And he is growing up really fast. So I'm glad I did it for those 3 years. It was cool. I loved it. It was a brilliant program. But yeah, I don't think, like, I'm glad that's not my life. I've just always been away from home.
Yeah.
I'm glad I've now got a career that's much more suited.
Yeah, I was going to say, it feels like you've carved out exactly what works for you. I'm quite surprised to hear you nearly stopped doing it because I would have thought it's something that is so inherent in how your home life is, not just your day job. And do you think that was partly like just, did you feel like any sort of, I don't know, doubts about your confidence about doing it when you'd had a baby? Or was it just more that you just thought, I'm not sure how I can make the interior designing as it presents at the moment work for me with a small child?
Oh, you're talking about when I decided to give it up altogether?
Yeah.
No, actually, to be fair, the giving it up altogether was because I'd been an interior stylist at that point, probably about 15 years. And I'd really done it. Like, I'd done every photo shoot for every magazine, all the brands. I was getting really bored of it, actually. And it was getting up at 5, going to the flower market, packing the car, going up to London, sitting in the Blackwall Tunnel for 45 minutes. You know,
yeah.
It was... and also, it's such a wonderful job. And I remember when I loved it and it was so creative fulfilling. And I sort of, after having Arthur, was thinking, I'm not loving it. Finding it knackering, and then I've got to unpack the car at the end of the day, and I've been doing this a long time, and I just need to, yeah, the love's gone. I really felt that. The love for this is gone, and that's not good, because this is a creative job, and there's loads of people who'd love, I just kept thinking there's loads of people who'd kill to have this job,
yeah,
and I'm whinging about it, like, that's just not good. It's time to have a refresh. So really, that, I just fell out of love with it. And interestingly, I haven't actually gone back to styling. So even though I'm still working with interiors, it's morphed into something else. And Instagram's arrived, and that's allowed me to have my own mini magazine platform, if you like. So yes, I'm still creating content. I'm still sharing my knowledge of interiors, doing lovely pictures. But I'm the client, if you like. Yeah. I haven't got some miserable editor going, oh, actually, we've decided that we're not going to go with Scandi on the cover this week. We're going to go, you know, and just being... You know, it's just annoying sometimes when someone else is pulling the strings. I love the fact that I'm now completely my own boss. And what's interesting as well with working with brands on Instagram and brand collaboration, because of my stylist background, they're not giving me the brief. They want me to create the brief. So it's exciting.
Yeah, definitely.
So I've found a new career, if you like, and rekindles my love for what
I was going to say. Do you think you love it as much now?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think before, when I was a stylist, you know, I'd have to do new ways with neutrals. I'd have to do whatever it was. It wasn't about me and my love of colour or taste. It was just like whatever the editor wanted. And now what's happened with social media is it's all about playing to my strengths.
Yeah.
And I think when you do that, when you have a job that really is the full expression of what you genuinely, authentically love and are good at, then you're just even better at it, aren't you? So I sort of feel on so many levels that I'm better than ever at what I'm doing and able to share genuinely what I know about interiors without having to fit into anybody else's expectations. It's brilliant and it's thrilling and everybody's doing it. It's great. You know, it's not just me. It's everybody's doing it. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Kind of new realm of ways of passing on your knowledge and inspiring people.
No, it's so true.
It's exciting.
When you phrase it like that as well, you say like the way that it can be much more, I mean, you get people that haven't, that find their own voice, if you like, on things like Instagram in a way that, in new jobs, new opportunities that just weren't even there before. And it's like that sort of magazine community thing that can conform, where you can cultivate that. But do you think you would have always found your way back to interiors anyway?
Well, when I got the job, so I was all ready to ditch it and try something else. And then Design Challenge came along, which did give me a whole new, you know, that was a whole new thing, a whole new craft working in TV. And me and Dan loved seeing these new designers, and they were so inspirational and innovative. These are people who weren't trained in design, who were given like £750 or £1,000 to completely remodel a room. We were just like, wow, you know, they're awesome. So I think that really rekindled a big passion. And then interestingly, it was my TV agent said to me, oh, you know, Sophie, I don't necessarily think the future's in telly. She was very visionary. I think the future's in YouTube or Instagram. And this was when Instagram was really, it was around, but nobody was really using it. So I was like, oh, okay, if you say so. And I sort of opened up a YouTube channel, which I've since, that kicked to the curb, because Instagram for me is so much more immediate and easy to tap into, because I'm not into editing, or I'm not a tech geek. I just go on stories and it's out there and then it's gone and then we move on. But yeah, so it was interesting that that's what she said. That was where the future was. And I think for me, for sure, she's right. I've never been busier. My business has never been more lucrative since I started up my own Instagram and that whole world. So yeah, it's empowered so many people, hasn't it? It's empowered so many mothers who can do what I set out to do, have that perfect balance of being present for your kid, being able to do the school run, and then sit at your desk and create a revenue for whatever it is. Yeah. You know, I've got friends who are fine artists and painters, and they've always been scrabbling around, and suddenly they're selling work directly on Instagram. It's awesome.
Yeah, no, I've discovered so many people like that on Instagram, and I love it. It's like I get really excited about all the possibilities of what's out there, and all these people who are really talented and have these sort of cottage industries where they buy, you know, you buy from them direct and follow their work, and it's really nice. And you know, sometimes you'll buy something from, I don't know, an artist on Instagram, or for me on things like eBay and Etsy as well, and you'll get like a little handwritten note that comes with it. And I just love that kind of love that goes from one place to the other, and like you really feel like you're actually tapping into something that's more than just buying something. So when I look at a picture on the wall, I bet, oh yeah, that was from that girl, and found out a little bit about her life, and it's really nice.
It's super nice, and it's always been there, but now we can hear the story, can't we?
Exactly.
Because it's not going via a department store or via an art gallery, or, you know, which takes the soul out of it. We are exactly having that conversation directly with the artist, or saying, well, I love this, but could you do it in this size or in this colour? Or, you know, it's super, super exciting.
It is. When I knew I was coming to see you, because I was thinking, I haven't actually spoken to many people who've got one child, and I thought it was by choice. And then recently I saw on Instagram you put that you've just had a birthday, and it was quite a big milestone for you, because it was a sort of like in your head it was when you were gonna officially sort of stop trying for a second baby, if that's what the fates had in store. And I thought, that was one area of our lives, for some reason everybody feels they're allowed to make very personal comments. It's always about kids. And I mean, from the moment I had one, it was, are you gonna have another? And then when you're having another, it's about what gender it is. And people make these really sweeping but incredibly personal comments, and they do it really from the get-go. And I thought, for you, that must have been really tough when you've had your first baby, and then everybody starts asking when they get to like two or three about having another one.
Yeah, it is tough. And I think what we need to do more is share that it's tough. You know, these conversations are tough, because I'm sometimes amazed that women as well, women to women, are still coming out with these really blunt, inappropriate, insensitive questions.
100%.
I mean, from my point of view, as you've probably gathered talking to me already, is my life has just been going to plan up until this fertility issue. You know, I very much like found the man, got him, right, tick, ring on finger, next. And you know, I suppose I'd got my dream TV job. I was just like winning at life, totally. You know, it was everything was really peachy. And as I said, you know, there was an unfortunate miscarriage, but I was told that was so normal, and then got pregnant again really easily. Like, I had no idea what was coming. I just thought everything, and I was going for three was my number. I left it too late to have five, so I probably probably would if I started earlier. Who knows? Because I'm quite greedy. I just love more, more, more. Give me more joy. Kids are great. Let's have loads of them. I love cushions. I've got loads of them. You know, I'm a maximalist in all areas of my life. So I just really wanted the crazy house full of loads of kids and chaos. I just thought that was just the dream. So had Arthur, and actually, you know, typically it was quite a traumatic birth. So I was like, oh, I'm not rushing into number two just yet. Let's recover from that, shall we? You know, so it really was probably 80. He was 18 months at least before I was even able to consider going again. And also I was working in my dream TV job. So then I did this crazy thing, looking back now, crazy thing of trying to time my pregnancy to work with filming dates.
I don't think that's that crazy.
Well, you know, had I known what I'd have known, I'd have just gone for it. But I was just thinking, oh, you know, I really need, if I'm going to get pregnant and I'm going to keep working in the on Design Challenge, then we need to time it this way. But I just thought that it would happen. And then it kind of didn't happen. And again, I wasn't worried because I was thinking, clearly I can just have one when I want one. And then I think I was 37. And I went to my GP and sort of said, oh, you know, it's not quite happening. And honestly, it was, even now. She just sort of said to me, well, what do you expect? You're 37. Like, of course you're not getting pregnant. And she just made me feel like such an idiot. Like,
wow.
Yeah, it was really, she was so blunt. And then was kind of like, well, the NHS aren't going to do anything for you because you've already got one. So off you go.
She sounds brilliant.
She was really brutal. And I just felt so humiliated. And I just thought, what have I been doing? I've been doing this timing thing of doing, you know, and thinking I can have my cake and eat it. And yeah, I'm 37 and I should have been a lot more on the case with this.
No, but what was she talking about? I know so many women. I've got a girlfriend that had her first baby at 39. I've got another one, first baby at 43.
Yeah.
This is not the life we're really living,
well,
actually.
Well, that's as it turns out, isn't it? It's everybody's fertility journey is completely different. Exactly. And everybody's...
But so, one thing is for sure, no matter what is going on with you, that is not a helpful response.
No, it wasn't helpful. It was, and so naturally I left that surgery that day. I was like, I'm
good,
deregistering from here. And then went to a fertility clinic and he sort of gave us some statistics of 20% chance. And I was like, oh, that doesn't sound brilliant. And oh, it's a lot of money. And then I went to see a natural fertility expert who was like, you're fit, you're well, you're all good. There's some hormonal imbalances we can sort out. We've got an 85% success rate. So I was like, okay, I'll go with you. So for 2 years, I did natural fertility work, which meant a really strict diet of no alcohol, caffeine, sugar. It was very dietary based.
You did this?
I did that really strictly for 2 years and looked amazing. Loads of weight. My skin was like a 12-year-old. Honestly, it's a harsh diet, but yeah, you look amazing.
Wow. So what's that? No alcohol, no caffeine, no sugar.
Yeah, no fun. Yeah.
And I'm clutching my
and no
sugar.
No sugar was literally like no honey, no natural sugars, no.
I guess ketchup's out of the picture.
Yeah, ketchup. I think I was allowed strawberries and blueberries.
Wow. Sweet. Thank you so much. I'll savour every single one.
And I suppose I just felt really positive. I'd always kept a really positive attitude that it would happen.
Mm.
And was I aware of people asking me? Maybe, maybe not. But at the same time, I just had no doubt that I was going to get pregnant. So I still just sort of maybe had a niggly worry. But I was just like, yeah, you know, this is going to happen.
We are very much encouraged as well to think that your own mental take on it is part of the picture.
Which yeah,
may or may not be the case, really. I mean, being positive is always a good thing for anyone, but you're also encouraged to think that's maybe going to be the thing that might help you.
Oh, I tell you the one, I've just remembered now the bit of advice used to really wind me up there. Oh, when you stop trying, it'll happen. Oh, my God, how unhelpful is that?
So unhelpful. What does that even mean?
How unhelpful is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that one a lot. If anybody's said that to anybody in the past, never say again. It's really unhelpful because, you know, you literally in your late 30s, you know, and this is now rolling into my 40s now, this would have been happening. You know, I'm like, I can't hang around You know, I've done that. I've done that. Oh, it'll happen. I've already been in that zone. That didn't happen. That didn't work. So now I have to do in the trying a bit harder phase. So I was in the trying a bit harder phase and trying not to get stressed, doing things like not working in telly to try and not have that insane stress, but still continuing to work. Because I was thinking, I'm not going to put all my eggs in one basket. I'm not going to give up working just for this. You know, it's a balance, isn't it? You're a rounded person. You need to have
definitely
other things in your life. And I remember thinking that I'm not going to give up my career for this, because I think that would be a mistake, and it would have been, because then I'd literally have been left with nothing. And then like with any fertility story, it does go on. So the natural thing didn't produce anything, and I think the ladies basically said to me, oh, you know, they started feeling like they couldn't do anything more for me. So then I hit Harley Street with a massive checkbook. I said, take all my money. I'm going to try IVF. And did one hideous round of that. So my beautiful, natural, clean body just got pumped full of, you know, everything. And that was a very, very upsetting experience. I think that whole fertility world could take a good, long, hard look at the way they treat women, especially of a certain age.
Yeah.
And then they basically said my eggs were too old. They actually said that. They're not, what was it? They're a bit flaccid. A bit flaccid. Oh. When she tried to put the, what is it? They tried to put the sperm in the egg. It was all a bit, it's all a bit flaccid, a bit old, a bit tough. Oh. Bit tough.
Oh, dear. Oh. Words.
The language.
And you never forget any of these things.
No,
as well,
the language is astonishing. It's such a cold, calculated.
I'm offended on behalf of your eggs.
I know. So I was like, come on, my little old baggy eggs, let's go home. So they didn't recommend.
It's a very intensive thing as well, IVF. It's I grew up with my stepmom having rounds of IVF, and even from where I was standing, the concentric circles of how it affects things, I take off my hat to anyone who's gone through it, actually. I didn't really realise until fairly recently quite how intrusive it is.
Yeah. Yes, you have to have a very positive mental attitude. And it was really hard. I set up a little WhatsApp group with some women that we'd sort of seen. We were obviously all going through it at the same time, so we sort of saw each other in the waiting room. And we did a little WhatsApp, and out of the five
That's nice,
of us,
actually.
Three of us were successful and two of us weren't.
Was that a helpful community, or was it
quite... I think it was at the time, because, you know, we were all supporting each other about these injections that we had to take. And because, you know, it's just really intense and really mad. And it was nice to be with other women who were getting through it. When it turned out that we were the two older women who weren't successful and the three younger ones, you know, it's just so, it is textbook. And then I didn't want to be in that WhatsApp group anymore after that. I wished them well, but I was like, I'm done and I'm not going again. So, you know, so that was that. And all the way through it, actually, that's really important to acknowledge is, you know, the older woman who was older than me, who wasn't successful, didn't have any kids. And that was her last time. Mm. And actually, they didn't have much money either. And they'd really borrowed up to their, I think her partner was a lorry driver, and they'd financially crippled themselves. And I really had to get a handle on how full is my cup. Actually, it's really full. I've got a job I love. I've got a wonderful son, and it's really important in those scenarios to be thankful and grateful, and tried really hard. And I think I was ultimately successful in focusing on what I have to be grateful. Mm. And that's what I've always carried through. But it's a funny thing when this is the unquantifiable thing that also my husband and I will never, he'll never really understand how I feel, because logically he's like, we have a lovely home, you have a lovely job, we've got wonderful friends, we've got wonderful son, why are you so upset? Like, he can't, he'll never understand that. And I think that's where women who've tried to have children will only ever really understand that fundamental basic yearning, which isn't logical.
I know, I totally get what you mean with that.
It's just and you know, not even all women have it either, but for those of us who have, it's something you can't talk yourself out with
no.
common sense.
You actually get a bit obsessed, I think. I never really knew what being properly broody was in that way until maybe I'd had my third, and that was like, I really got it then, that yearning, that thing of just, I can't stop thinking about this other little person that might be out there. And actually, when I was going to have my last baby, you know, I was approaching 40, and I thought, I did think, I mean, I grew up in two households that had fertility issues. My mum tried to have a third baby with my stepdad and actually ended up having 10 miscarriages, just couldn't carry any to term. Never really got to the bottom of what happened. She's spoken about this publicly, so I'm not being really disloyal by bringing that up. And then my other household, my dad's household, my stepmom and dad were going through lots of rounds of IVF and trying to have a baby. And, you know, I thought when I had my last baby, I'm just going to try and be really at peace with this. And if it doesn't happen, I don't really want this to be the thing that I just latch onto and can't move on from. But it's easier said than done. I don't really know what it would have felt like I'm sure I would have had to go on my own journey with it. And I think whenever I've wanted a baby, it's like it sort of fills every part of my head. And the logic is definitely not a factor. It's like very much not a factor. If that was a factor, that was, you know. Logic doesn't really factor very much in my decision making, to be honest with you. I don't find logic that sexy.
No,
the time.
It's overrated.
It really
totally
is.
Totally overrated.
It really is. But I'm sure that Arthur has had lots of. I do sometimes worry about the fact, because I have got a lot of kids, and I do feel like it's not their fault that I ended up giving them four brothers. And it's, you know, I remember when I told my eldest about having Mickey, and he was really sad about it. And he said, there's only two parents and there's a lot of us to go around. And I feel weirdly, I feel like if I hadn't had lots, I would have just had him. I had Sonny he was four, nearly five till we had another baby. And I really liked
Oh, so he did have you to himself for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. And I was on my own as a child till I was eight, and then continued being an only child at my dad's house till I was in my late teens. And I think it's definitely been a big part of who I am, actually. I think I still carry that only child version of me, even though I ended up having lots of much younger siblings. And I think sometimes I do worry that I haven't been able to, I'm sort of almost a bit jealous of the idea of having just one where you can just put that focus. Because for me, the kids get more and more complex the older they get.
I've heard. yeah.
And that's what I was thinking when you said, you know, you took a year off when they're a baby for work. That's absolutely lovely. But really, that's like much more for us as mums. But for them as kids, I think they benefit a lot more from having you around when they're older. And the guilt I feel with the older ones for going to work or not being there for everything is much more significant than any boohooing bubba I leave behind the door when they're like, you know, before they're two or three. Because I know that, you know, they're easily distracted, aren't they? 15 minutes after I've gone, they've forgotten about it. But the older ones will ask me questions. And this is the third night out you've been out, you know, in the last 2 weeks. Or you promised me you weren't going to do that anymore and all that stuff.
Oh, wow.
And I find that much harder. That tugs at my, you know, heartstrings.
And is it that they just want your presence, or is it that they've actually got stuff that they need to talk to you about?
Bit of both. I think for my eldest two, they just like having me around. Yeah. They just like knowing I'm in the building. And, you know, sometimes Sonny might come and hang out. He's 16 now, and he might come in the kitchen and start making himself a cup of tea. Or I just noticed that he's, I don't know, got himself a bowl of cereal in the evening, but he hasn't actually just taken up to his room. He's like lingering.
Yeah.
I think, oh, maybe there's something on his mind. And I've got to try and sort of find the way in. And I spoke to Catelyn Moran about this because she's got two girls that are in their late teens now. And she said during the teenage years, you have to almost make yourself like a cow and just moo at them. You just kind of turn. And I thought, actually, I'd never thought of it in those terms, but I definitely have turned myself slightly buffoony for my eldest. And I know that's like a weird way of terming it, but I feel a bit like Mr. Blobby or something. So I'll be like this sort of like, it's only me, it's only mummy. I'll probably say the wrong thing or do something a bit embarrassing, but I'm harmless. And by being this sort of harmless creature, I try to encourage him to be as candid as possible so that he doesn't feel I'm judging him or just always keeping him problem solving.
Yeah.
But I think I think he needs me the most in a way. And it's the hardest thing because he's the one that's on some little bungee cord attached to his bedroom. So I sort of have to pull him down to the elastic at a stretching point, find a way to tether him to a chair. And then when I'm not looking, I'll untie and boing, he's back in his room again. And I'll be like, where's Sonny gone? So yeah, I definitely think the idea of having one child and being able to listen and react and play and all that stuff. There's a lot I've not been able to do. A lot.
Yeah, no, as you say, every family is unique and every situation's unique. And I had so much guilt for not giving Arthur a brother and sister because I kept thinking he'd be so amazing. He'd be such an amazing brother and sister and he would have done. But, you know, he doesn't know that. He doesn't know the
And also sometimes
difference.
He'd find his sibling really annoying as well.
Oh,
and then
my
you'd be thinking,
gosh, I was horrible to my brother now I look back. And I think, God, he's luckily he hasn't got a sister like me, though.
Sometimes it's, you know, it's like everything. There's like a yin and yang to literally everything.
Mm.
And I think with family, especially, you learn so quickly. You know, nature taught you in a really cruel way, but you don't have a lot of control over what goes on. You don't have a lot of control over who they are, what they need from you, what they're going to want to do. You know, Arthur might even let you paint his window the colour he wants. There's loads of stuff.
I can't. I mean, he's got his father's kind of engineering. Spatial. He loves Minecraft. I'm sure there'll be loads of women out there who are like, yeah, we get the Minecraft. I just don't understand what the heck is going on with it.
Yeah, Minecraft is an odd one. Kit's built like whole worlds in there.
Yeah.
And he takes me on tours.
Oh, yes, tours. And I have to do the mooing.
Interesting. They're like the saddest cities I've ever seen because there's no people. But this is an office block. This is a hotel. This is, you know, apartments to rent. I'm like, who are they for?
Yeah.
There's no people in these little Minecraft villages he takes me on.
Yeah, no, it is literally another world. And it's fascinating to see that that's how his brain works, because it certainly isn't how I work, you know. And I suppose with kids as well, selfishly, I was looking forward to the glitter and the artwork and the crafting and, you know, because that's what I loved doing as a kid. It's just never really, that's just not his vibe, and that's cool. So, you just let, you know, it's having kids isn't about you, is it? It's about them and what they're into and seeing them flourish, and that's a real privilege. And I do learn a lot, you know, not just that white windows let more light into the room, that's not just the only thing he's taught me. You know, they teach you loads of stuff, don't they?
They do.
For him, it's to be, because he's quite chilled, Arthur. He's a very slow, chilled, gentle child, and I'm quite the opposite energy. And, you know, he'll stay, you know, and he'll call me out on it. Or if I snap at him too sharply to put his shoes on, he'd be like, "Mummy, you didn't say that in a very kind way." And I'm like, oh, okay.
Aww.
You know, it's good. He sort of like calls me out on stuff. It's good. Yeah, he's good for me.
Yeah,
it's good.
He sounds like a lovely boy. do you think that sometimes when there's, I think they call it secondary fertility issues, when someone's been able to have a baby very easily first time and then struggles, do you think that sometimes people can be a bit dismissive of it if you've already got a child?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I haven't suffered from too much of that. Oh, why didn't you have another one? I didn't really hear
or
that a lot.
People thinking, but you've already got one.
Oh, yeah, possibly. It interests me that maybe some people think that was a choice. I don't know. I don't overly worry. I have to admit, I don't overly worry.
No, I think that's a good thing.
About
I'm only
what
curious
people,
because sometimes those things can happen.
Yeah.
I've got a girlfriend that had exactly that, and she just couldn't have another baby and nothing seemed to happen. And I think she felt like some of her friends didn't really quite understand why it was such a big deal when
you've already
had
got one. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, possibly. Possibly people don't. What is frustrating with it is, you know, I was never told why, you know, they couldn't ever find the thing that was the reason. Although, and actually, I quite liked the fact they said this to me because it did make me feel better, is the IVF gynecologist sort of said, it could be that you've got fertility issues that we haven't found out, and therefore having your son is, you've been really lucky.
Well, that's actually...
Yeah, and I thought, oh, that's a super way of looking at it. So rather than being lacking of like, oh, why can't I, to step back and go, wow,
yeah, you
really
already had
lucky.
Such a big gift with it already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Because it clearly is a very complicated thing that they can't always get to the bottom of.
No, it's very true. My mum never found out what caused her miscarriages, ever. She'd gone from finding it easy to get pregnant to suddenly it just wasn't happening.
Wasn't happening.
No, she never. She has a theory that it's to do with her immune system and rejecting the pregnancy. But
yeah, I think they were talking to me about a similar thing, that it wasn't even getting as far as miscarriage. It was just all being, the immune system was shutting it down from the get-go.
Mm.
Because there just wasn't no pregnancies. Like,
yeah, but I can see, looking around, this house is absolutely brimming with happiness and love and colour. And I feel like, do you think it's possible to have a house that is so loving if it's not so filled with colour? I know this is a controversial issue.
Yes,
by
I do.
The way.
I think it's absolutely. I think anyone with a all grey house is dead in the heart. Cold behind the eyes. Yeah.
Did you grow up in a bright house?
I grew up in a really creative house. My parents were kind of like the original fixer-uppers. My dad worked in the motor industry. Mm. So consequently, as a regional manager, we moved a house a lot. I think we moved six times by the time I was seven.
Wow, that is a lot.
Yeah, and they would buy wrecks and do them up because my dad liked the he actually loved DIY. So even though he was in a suit in the office all week, he loved getting the sledgehammer out and everything like that the weekend. And my mum did all the decorating. So yes, she didn't have a career, I'm using the inverted commas, but she was a housewife and fixing up houses. So that's what she'd do all day. She'd be painting, decorating. She still wallpapers for me here. She hangs all my wallpaper.
Does she?
Yeah, she's like super
that's
good.
That's a skill as well, actually, hanging wallpaper.
Yeah, she's very, very skilled decorator and she's very artistic. So do you remember that sort of 80s, 90s decorating craze for paint effects?
Yeah, definitely.
Rag rolling.
Yeah. I had a rag rolled bedroom.
Yes, me too. I think actually mine was colour washed.
There was all of that stuff going on.
So my mum was big into that. So it was really exciting watching her creating all these paint effects. There was hand-painted kind of grapevines and ivy around the kitchen. It was
cool.
That really bucolic 80s kitchen, you know, with the hops and the dried flowers. You remember the dried
flower
thing was massive. We had dried flowers everywhere. Laura Ashleen, Knock Yourself
Potpourri,
Out.
All of that as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. So it was a very creative home because of her and very maximalist. And then there was my dad sort of effing and jeffing because he drilled through an electrical wire or whatever. So it was, there was always a lot going on, but I think I was kind of like woken up to the magic of the before and after from a young age of seeing the, it's this horrible house they've bought us to, oh wow. And just like literally watching it transform in front of our eyes. Because my brother's in the same industry, interestingly. He works for interior design TV shows. So he does all the work and set design and stuff like that. So it's clearly, you know, had a massive impact on us. And then, and it is that transformation of how when you do a space up, how it makes you feel. It makes you feel amazing. If it's all like anaglypta and magnolia and blur and unloved, and then you bring in the colour and the creativity, I think is a really big thing. It's not just about rolling out a new colour on the walls. It is your collection of art.
Yeah.
Your things, your possessions, your knickknacks. It's all of those layers. I call it like feathering a nest. It's just bringing more...
You're right, it's not about the colour so much, is it? It's about
the
creativity
whole thing.
And character.
Yeah. And I sort of found myself, like I've always loved design, but it has only been recently where I kind of realised that it's a real gift to be able to do up your house, because for lots of people, and I kind of want to say women because I know it's mainly women who love my content, it is this homemaking, if you like, is a creative outlet, and not everybody has that. And I've always had that, and it's really helped through all my woes of not being able to have a child or whatever it might be. Being able to be creative in my home has always been my happy. It's always lifted me up and made me feel good. And if you've got a home, even if you rent, you don't have to own a home, you can have this, you can have this creative outlet of playing with pattern, with colour, playing around with how things look, how you respond to stuff, working out what colours lift you up. And everybody's got one, and it makes a massive impact on us. I mean, it's massive. Been scientifically proven.
Yeah.
They said there was a brilliant study by the Happiness Institute based in Copenhagen. There's a thing called the Happiness Institute. Can you believe it? It's brilliant. Based in Copenhagen. And
they never have a bad day there.
They did extensive research into what affects our well-being and happiness. And one was our mental health, like literally our mental health. And then number two was your home.
Ah.
And that came ahead of how much money you earn, came ahead of what job you've got, came ahead of your social status in the world, and physical well-being came ahead of that too.
Wow.
So I think it's really underestimated.
Me too. I can literally have my mood lifted by what I see in my house every day. Just combination of colours, it has a really positive effect on my head. I can feel it happen to me. I actually wondered if you might know if there's a word for that. Because I sometimes if I see like the way two colours look next to each other, or just the colour of something unexpected, it might even be like one of the kids' toys or I don't know, something I pass or something, but I feel like I can get like a lift from it.
Yeah. Yeah, like a boost of serotonin, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Well, I think what's really interesting, and this is what I covered in the colour psychology course that I launched earlier in the year I was telling you about, is we all have quite unique reactions to colour.
Hmm.
So, for example, you know, you and I obviously clearly have a similar resonance with colour, and we enjoy seeing certain colours together. So, for example, like behind you, I've painted my doors like a really acid lemon yellow.
I spotted that, yeah.
And that, I'm just like, that's just brilliant to me.
Yeah, it gives you something when you
look
at it.
But I'm aware that some people are like, oh my gosh, why do you paint your doors yellow? That's a really hectic colour. And so it's not just going, these are the happy colours, although they are from a joyful palette of colours. But going back to your sort of question of whether people with all grey interiors can truly be happy.
That's not quite how I phrased it.
Maybe that's what I said. Certain people, a very chalky, grey, monotone is their happy place.
Yes, I can understand that. Really.
I did some work.
I was just being immature.
I did some work with Kelly Hoppen. We were on telly together a few years ago. And Kelly Hoppen, obviously, really successful interior designer, so yes. successful. She's literally made billions out of the colour taupe. Like, that, it is popular. Let's just put it that way.
It is popular.
And she does it extremely well, and she's totally carved that market that she knows how to do the neutrals thing. And we were filming, and I was wearing a particularly Larry psychedelic dress at the time.
You rebel.
And she was like, Sophie, you were literally giving me a headache standing next to you. She was stressed. It was stressing her out.
Wow.
And I thought that, and I don't think she was just, you know, she was obviously slightly joking, but she was also, it's true,
yeah, I can understand.
Really, really hectic colours really stress her out. And then I did my podcast in her house, beautiful house in Bayswater or Notting Hill somewhere, like it, just like exquisite. But, and I could appreciate the beauty and the, you know, it was good design, but I did not want to hang out there because it was just 50 shades of grey. And I found myself
making no assumptions about what goes on.
Yeah, and I, you know, and I'd say this to Kelly's face. It's cool. I'm not saying she's got a horrible house, but for me, her colour palette puts me on a downer. It just so for her, it makes her feel calm and
I
serene.
I guess interior designers can talk to each other like that without offending you.
I don't know whether they can. I'm not sure many. I think Kelly can take it. She's got thick skin, but no, a lot of interior designers are very precious. But I think it's really important to acknowledge that there's not one size fits all.
Mm.
And so, yes, I encourage bright colour and pattern. And if you love it, come and jump on the fun bus. Let's go. But at the same time,
I'm already there.
If it's not for you, then that's cool too.
Yeah. I think some people are quite scared of things as well, because I think if you're someone that feels happy being very demonstrative in your home about what makes you happy, even if it's quite outlandish and bold, I think sometimes that's a language you have to teach yourself. Not everybody grows up in a creative home. My mum, like, she's got things we've drawn on the wall. My bedroom at home, the rag rolling. But then
Is it still there?
The rag rolling's gone, but I painted on the wall when I was 11 when we moved in. I did murals. So I did like one of like a mermaid, I did a girl on a horse, I did a big cherub on the wall, like massive. My mum kept some of them, and there's a bit on the wall where she's got all of us to write down poems. And so this is when I must have been about 15, 16. So of course I went like, I did Pulp lyrics and Emily Dickinson poem. It's like the most teenage thing you've ever seen.
Yeah, totally.
But it has like things my brother and sister did, and that's been there for decades. And I think the fact that I grew up in a home where writing on the wall was completely fine if it was something that you were committed to and it was, you know, there to be enjoyed, not there as an act of like rebellion. But I definitely do it with my kids, and if they do, actually I wonder how you'd write. So one of my children, maybe not in the smartest move, not only did he draw on the wall, he decided to write his name. So obviously I was like, Ray. You've written Ray on the wall.
That's taking ownership, isn't it?
Well, also, I'm like, it's not the smartest bit of graffiti you've ever done. That's quite immediately identifiable as you. But how would you feel about if Arthur did something on, wrote on the wall? Or
what, in
something?
Here?
Yeah, in here.
Oh, yeah, that's a... now, you see, this is really interesting, because I was just listening to you thinking how incredible for your mum, because she's literally given you permission to express yourself in your own home, and I think that is wonderful. And I... The reason why I think I got on to wanting to... Because I wanted to be an interior designer from the get-go, was because at age 7, my mum gave me complete carte blanche to do whatever I wanted in my bedroom, and it was such an empowering, exciting experience. And then continued to let me have an influence and a say. I did a mural on a door once. Yeah. I remember doing that on a door, but not on the walls as such. Mm. But, you know, wherever it is, whatever surface you're allowed, I think some ownership where you're not being controlled and saying, oh, no, darling, you need to do it in this colour. And I'd actually like this typeface. And, you know, it's just like whatever you want. And obviously the kids' bedroom is the obvious place for them to do that. And I would say that, yeah, Arthur can wholeheartedly do it there. Probably not in here.
No, I wouldn't like him to do it in here. you've got to have one.
But they've got to have, I think that's really important to have that space to do it. I think it's really, really important. And I absolutely, one of my biggest design crimes is those hideous, overstyled kids' rooms on Instagram where, okay, for a baby, fine. But I'm sorry, when your child's like five or over, I mean, even before five, Arthur was very opinionated on what he wanted for his bedroom. I think it's one room in your whole house. Like, move over, fashion police.
I know.
Let the kids.
I do find it quite funny when people have got these really, like, polite, like, beautiful, like, shades of, like, you know, taupe or, like, the odd pop of yellow, but it's basically a very neutral kids room. I'm like, just wait. And they go, we only want wooden toys, no plastic.
Just wait. I love that. You know what's coming.
Yeah, evil laugh.
The teenage thunderstorm is brewing when they're going to get their own back. Yeah, no, I think it's... yeah, because I had that incredible experience as a kid, and obviously you did too, and you know what that meant to you. It's just really empowering, and it encourages you to be creative. It tells you... See, the thing is with children as well, whatever art they create is brilliant, isn't it? So we can't judge it and say, oh, well, no, that's, you know, not the way to do it. So, no, I think that's really important.
So if anyone was listening and thinking what's a good place to start with making their home feel a bit more joyful, have you got something you normally recommend when people ask for a bit of advice?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of fear around doing your house up. And while I've been extolling Instagram as being the best thing ever, it also gives people a lot of concern about keeping up. And, you know, I've already admitted to you that this house looked like a total car crash before you arrived this morning. And they were like, oh, it's so beautifully styled. And I was like, yeah, not 45 minutes ago. It wasn't.
But also, the sort of mess you described wasn't really what I call mess. You had like some papers out and some Lego on that. Like, that's very acceptable.
But I think it's really, I think one of the bad things about social media and my whole career in magazines is making people that think that there's this perfect life that's unobtainable and that it has to look a certain way. The other thing that you have to do, and I'm amazed this is still an issue, is stop worrying what other people think. Mm. It stops so many people going for that luscious colour or that chintzy sofa or that really crazy artwork. It's like, oh, is that a bit much? Will people judge me?
Yeah.
Like, number one, seriously, that is absolute insanity. First of all, it's your house and you're
even
the one who's in it.
The judgmental person is your other half.
Yes, okay. Well, they're another bit of a roadblock that we have to... There's different negotiation tools to get around them. But I think that's really important. The other thing is to notice, like we've already sort of touched on, everybody's got really different tastes and ideas of what's nice, and you're never going to please everybody. So when people are like, oh, I'm going to sell my house at some point, therefore should I do it neutral? Like...
yeah.
This house was neutral when I bought it and I hated it and I couldn't wait to get the beige out. So you never know who your future buyer is going to be. So, you know, let's just get rid of all the fear of what other people think. And then it's really down to you. And you have to do the work. There isn't some, you know, I'm not going to give you a colouring in book of like, do the walls this colour and the floor this colour and off you go. You have to do the work and you have to really understand what designs and colours you like. And you have to listen to your heart. I think we live in our head so much. Mm. You know, is this a trend? Am I going to go off it? Am I only liking it? Because all the feedback I hear from people, it's all head fear. Yeah. And drop into your heart. And if you, like the wallpaper in my office, it came through the post, squeals, like literal squeals of delight, hairs on the back of the neck. Mm. No, you have to have that. You have to have that thing if you're getting that kind of reaction. But you have to allow yourself to be open to that. You know, if you see that sunshine yellow velvet sofa in the shop window and you're like, oh, you just feel the uplift.
Yeah.
You know, then it comes in the voice going, oh, wow. Yeah, but will you go off bright yellow? You know, shut that voice off.
Yeah.
Listen to the heartfelt one. So I think for anybody who's looking to be more courageous, more bold, take bold choices, it's because you need to. If you've got that conversation, people in grey houses don't have these worries. They're happy with their grey. But if you're someone in a grey or beige house itch, feeling something's not being fulfilled here, feeling like the potential hasn't been unleashed, then you've got to start doing the work. And it could be a wallpaper, it could be a piece of artwork, it could be a fabric cushion. Start small. I mean, one of my sort of biggest tips for people who are totally stuck is take a fabric you love. Okay, so like this chintz on this sofa. I love this fabric so much. I've even got a jumpsuit in it.
Yeah, must be very confusing when you sit on
head. It's such a good fabric, but it's because the palette is the orange, the pink, the blue. Can you see all the different colours in isolation?
I can.
Those are all the colours I love. So the pinks on the walls, you know, the blues on the sofa over there, the greens are in the accessories, and so it. And yeah. So it goes out.
It's
so
a celebration, isn't
it? It's an easy way to kick off a scheme, is just to start with, like, a hero pattern, if you like.
Well, I think it's so, so successful. It's such a lovely environment here.
Are you getting hot? I'm actually getting really hot now with the wood burner. I can feel my cheeks are burning.
No, me too. And I've done this weird thing of sort of taking half my cardio off. Because earlier I went into a coffee shop with Claire and I looked down and my middle button had popped open.
Oh, we love that.
And I'm just really paranoid that's going to happen again. So I've been cautiously holding onto the middle of my dress for some time.
Oh, wow, Sophie is hot. She's literally stripping off.
Luckily, I'm wearing a really colourful bra, so you'd be okay with it.
You're still coordinating. Oh, yeah. Pro all the way to the end. I love it.
I think not only have you let us into your house, we're going to have some lunch.
Yeah, we're going to have some lunch.
So let's go and eat, because my tummy's been making really loud rumbles. Thank you so much, Sophie.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for coming. I'm going to go and open the window.
Oh, I know. It's really fun. Oh, how lovely was that? Were you giggling along with Sophie and I as you listened? It was nice to have a proper laugh, actually. I found myself smiling a lot, and I'm sorry if I offended anyone by asking that question about if non-colourful homes aren't filled with as much sort of passion. I'm sure it's not true. I think it's also just because I'm also a little bit, sometimes a bit jealous of people who are able to have very sort of pared back surroundings. So much of my colour in my house is derived from very strange items for a grown woman to have, like oversized toys and ice creams and things like this. So I do appreciate that people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. But it was so nice to see Sophie and spend time in her colour-drenched house, which does wonders for my soul and my spirit, as did the delicious spinach pie that her husband Tom made for our lunch that day. What a lovely thing that is. It's not often, if I ask someone to be my guest on my podcast, that they end up making me lunch. But never going to say no to that, am I? Thanks so much for giving me your time. As I speak to you, it is the end of Sunday and the nights are drawing in, so it's pitch black outside, even though it's not actually that late. We managed a little bit of a wintry autumnal walk today in the rain. But mainly we were quite sloth-like this weekend, just spending lots of time indoors and wearing gym jams, apart from my sparkly gold dress, as I mentioned before, which I'm still wearing. Anyway, I will see you next week, when I will be joined with the lovely Jessie Cave, who recently welcomed her third baby into the world. And we speak all things having a baby during this year, what it's like to meet the father of your child and get together very quick, and also what it's like when you split up for a while, which is what happened to them. So I had a lovely chat with Jessie. I really enjoyed her company too. See you next week. Thanks so much. Take care, stay safe, and stay sane. All the best.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.